As we head into election season, many people are thinking about the federal policies that have changed our lives over the past 4 years, from economy to national security. Many of the people who voted for President Obama the first time did so based on campaign promises like this one.
I will provide our intelligence and law enforcement agencies with the tools they need to track and take out the terrorists without undermining our Constitution and our freedom. That means no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens. No more national security letters to spy on citizens who are not suspected of a crime.
That speech was made in 2007 as then-candidate Obama took on the Bush administration's controversial Patriot Act. Then, 4 years later, we woke up to this news.
President Obama signed into law a 4-year extension of the Terrorism Fighting Patriot Act. The Senate and House passed the extension just before it was due to expire. That bill extends the life of roving wiretaps, court-ordered searches of business records, and the surveillance of suspects without known ties to terrorist groups.
Last month, two Democratic senators sent a letter to Attorney General Eric Holder expressing concern over how the administration interprets the Patriot Act, saying the public would be alarmed if they knew the extent to which the government is using its Patriot Act powers. Pulitzer Prize winner David Shibler has been a New York Times correspondent in Israel and Moscow. In his two most recent books released earlier this year, he turns his attention to the erosion of civil liberties in the U.S. In his books Rights at Risk and The Rights of the People, Shibler argues that both the war on terror and the war on crime have allowed the government to seep into Americans' personal lives in unconstitutional ways. Shibler recently stopped by the station to discuss his new books with KALW's criminal justice editor, Rena Palta.
A lot of people, I guess, associate the decline in civil rights for the purposes of security as associated with the post-9/11 era. And I think you say that it started even before then.
Yes, it did. I mean, certainly if you look at the Fourth Amendment, for example, which governs the government's ability to do searches of you or surveillance, the book I wrote about that goes into pre-9/11 situations in which ordinary crime was the reason for relaxing restraints on the police. So I spent time with police in Washington, D.C., two units in particular, an undercover narcotics squad and a gun squad. The gun squad's job was to get guns off of people. It was illegal for them to have guns on their person. So in the middle of the night, they'd go off and they would arrive in black neighborhoods, pull up in marked cars. The police were wearing uniforms because they wanted to see how people reacted when they arrived. And the way people reacted, they thought, indicated whether they had a gun or not. What happened, in fact, was that young men standing around on a warm night would just pull up their T-shirts without even being asked to show that they didn't have guns. Police officers would go up and they'd say, you know, good evening, gentlemen. Got any guns or drugs this evening? Sort of like, you know, can I bum a cigarette? And then they'd chat them up and they say, you know, can we just do a quick search, you know, and they would pat them down. Under the law, the police do not have the authority to frisk you on the street unless they have reasonable suspicion to believe that you're armed. But they went ahead and did this, and mostly because people acquiesced. I mean, they didn't object. They might have objected inside their own heads, but they didn't overtly say, you can't search me. If they had, the police would not legally have been able to do that. Basically, what this means is that the Fourth Amendment, as one federal judge said to me, he said, you know, the Fourth Amendment is practically non-existent in criminal law anymore because the courts have been so permissive. They've allowed the police to do so searches in so many situations without warrants that the Fourth Amendment has really been gutted.
So I'm speaking with David Shibler, and we're about to move on to national security issues in relation to his new books, Rights at Risk and The Rights of the People. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the Brandon Mayfield case and kind of how that fits into your narrative in the book.
Brandon Mayfield was a Portland, Oregon lawyer who was mistakenly identified as having a fingerprint on a plastic bag of detonators found near the Madrid train bombings. The Spanish National Police found the print on the bag, sent it around through Interpol. It arrived at the FBI. And the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, used a computer system to generate, I think, about 20 possible matches. They found what they thought was a match and identified it as belonging to Mayfield. When they found out that Mayfield had converted to Islam and went to the same mosque as some men who were locked up for terrorism because they had tried to get to Afghanistan after 9/11 to fight with the Taliban, this group was called the Portland Seven, they thought they had their man. And they sent his print to the Spanish National Police, who said, no, it's not a match. And the FBI was so determined to make it a match that they kept sending agents at our expense as taxpayers to Madrid to try to persuade the Spanish police that this was a match. After they got the print, they used a secret warrant. This is a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA as it's called, is a law that was put into force in 1978 to protect privacy in the United States from intelligence gathering without good cause. And this law was amended and loosened after 9/11. So the FBI, with a warrant, did what they call sneak and peek searches. They sent people into Brandon Mayfield's home when he wasn't there, and they copied his computer hard drives. They took samples of DNA. They took 300 and some photographs, cigarette butts, all that kind of stuff. They also left some telltale signs of their presence. So Brandon had a kind of eerie feeling that he was being watched. He didn't really know. Actually called the police, and the police asked if they wanted him to do anything. Was anything missing? And Brandon said, nothing seems to be missing, but it's really strange, the whole thing. And what was really troubling about this, I think, in the end, was the fact that once they had developed a theory of the crime, or a theory of Mayfield's involvement, they refused to acknowledge contradictory evidence. For example, Mayfield had not been outside the United States for 10 years, and he didn't even have a valid passport. And that might have been a tip-off that he didn't go to Madrid and, you know, handle detonators, right, in a plastic bag. But instead of accepting that, the FBI concluded that he must have traveled under an alias with forged documents. So that kind of thing. So they were very determined to see Mayfield branded as the culprit. And it was only after the Spanish National Police actually found the person whose fingerprint was on the bag in Madrid that Mayfield was cleared. Otherwise, I think there's a good chance he'd be in prison now.
So is this kind of thing exceptional, or has this been happening a lot?
You know, we don't know, because the FISA warrants are secret and the searches are secret. So we don't know the extent to which innocent people have been placed under surveillance.
It's interesting, because this is kind of an era where our norms about privacy are changing a lot. You know, Google reads our email already just to decide which advertisements to show us.
Right.
And I kind of wonder, I mean, there's already been a certain segment of the population who's always said, you know, what's the harm? If I'm not doing anything wrong, who cares if the government's reading this and that of my personal correspondence? And the norms seem to be going even more that way. So is it true that we're coming to the point where Americans maybe don't care if their privacy is being compromised for public safety?
First of all, ask Brandon Mayfield, the lawyer in Portland, Oregon, whether you don't have anything to worry about if you're doing nothing wrong. He was doing nothing wrong. He was jailed. He came within an inch of being prosecuted for terrorism. It was only the Spanish National Police's insistence that his fingerprint didn't match that saved him. So I don't think that that's a good response. That means you trust the officials in government enormously to do the right thing, to be intellectually honest, to test evidence. And I think we know from our own history, as well as the history of other countries, that the system of freedom depends on checks and balances and institutions that are built into the system, not on the goodwill of particular individuals. You know, at the Constitutional Convention, James Madison said famously, all men having power ought to be distrusted to a certain degree. And nothing has changed. So it's a dangerous moment, I think, in our history when the surveillance is invisible, and therefore we're not very concerned about it.